Welcome to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on NewYorkTalkRadio.net. This is Barbara, and I'm a registered pharmacist and nutritionist in private practice in New York City. Today, I'll be speaking with Dr. Karen Sherman, who is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, a book that's dedicated to helping you transform your life. Before I introduce Dr. Karen, I would like to direct you to my website. So since you're listening online, the address is www.barbaramendeznutrition.com. While you're there, do sign up for the blog, which is rootsandseeds.com, and you'll automatically have that delivered to you about once a week with recipes and other suggestions to help you lead a healthy lifestyle. Also, on my website is my newsletter, and that comes out every other month, and that will also be automatically delivered to you when you sign up for it, and that is just always different kinds of information to help you, you know, include more vegetables in your diet, or how to eliminate sugar from your diet, how to start adopting an exercise program, things like that. But one of the primary things I find that gets in the way of people adopting a healthy lifestyle is the way that they think. So today, Dr. Sherman is going to be talking to us a little bit about how we can stop or get over our conditioning and the way that we see things, the way that we operate in our lives to help us make change and actually do the things that we long to do. And Dr. Karen Sherman is a licensed psychologist in New York. She's been in private practice for over 20 years. Her focus is relationships and marriages, and she helps people achieve their greatest potential. Her newest book, Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, helps people transform their lives, and it helps people let go of their conditioned responses to help them actually make the changes that they've longed to make and help them and make them stick. I was fascinated when I read this book because I have to tell you that my biggest challenge with clients is helping them change the way that they think. We all think we want to be a healthy and lead a healthy lifestyle, but it's our mind that often gets in the way. So I want to thank Dr. Karen Sherman for being on the show. Hi, Dr. Sherman.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Barbara. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show and sending me your lovely book. So what inspired you to write this book? Because it's really such an important topic.
Well, as you may or may not know, the stereotype that a lot of psychologists come from dysfunctional homes is probably true.
Mm-hmm.
And at one particular point in my life, I faced a very harsh reality. From my childhood, there was a major, major disappointment, which threw me into a terrible tailspin. And I was in a terrible depression. At one point, the pain was so horrible, I wasn't really sure if I could continue to face it.
Yeah.
But I made the choice to look at my pain, to look at my past, and to continue living. In doing so, I had the help of a therapist and did some of my own work and came up with tools that I used with my clients and found that I didn't have to be prisoner to my past, that I didn't have to let my past define me. And I now live a very joyous life. I am free from my past, and I felt that I wanted to let other people know that they could have the same kind of freedom. I think that too many of us live based on our past, and I truly want people to know that that does not have to be the case.
Yeah, and it's you have some great suggestions in there on how to help overcome some of these patterns of behavior. But what I was really curious about when I was reading the book, because I think so many people have, you know, really dark moments and really painful moments. What was it, like, I'm always curious about what is it about one particular time that helps you make that change, whereas every other time prior to that, you tried, you wanted to, and you just couldn't do it. Like, what is, in your experience as a psychologist, like, that moment that just revolutionizes the person and says, I'm not living this way anymore?
Well, my experience both for myself and with my clients has been, and as you said, Barbara, it doesn't have to be this way for everybody. But it's usually that moment where you feel like you've hit rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make a choice as to whether you're going to give in or whether you're going to say no. You know, it's not going to be like this. I'm not going to give in to it. You know, whether for some people it's, am I going to lose my family? For some people, it's a health decision.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, as I said, whether I wanted to really commit suicide or not. And when it gets that bad, then the pain is just so awful that you have to decide whether you're going to do something about it or you're not going to do mm-hmm. something about it. You know, as a psychologist, nobody ever calls me to say, gee, I'm having a wonderful life. I think I'd like to come in and just tell you about it or explore what makes it good. People only really look to make change when things are bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why you call the book The Art of Choice, because it's a choice. Right. So it's something that you have to decide to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then set about doing it. And you refer to it as an art rather than a science.
Yes, yes. And the reason that I do that is because although we really know that even within science it's not always exact, it certainly is much more precise. And what I want people to know is that there is not any secret formula that I can give them that says, you know, do this, do this, do this, and then absolutely you've got, you know, the perfect formula. However, everybody has their own process, and I can help people through the tools that I offer, offer them a way through the process of how to make the change. And then you have to honor your own process. And so that's a little bit more of an art as opposed to it being the more precise way that we look at science.
And it's an art, and also it's a practice, right? Because you have to not give up on it. You have to keep doing it.
Yes, that's a very good point. You have to not give up, and you have to know that it's not going to be something that's going to constantly be an upward moving process where you're always going to see success. It's more like a spiral. And that's true of anything, that any time that you're making changes. You know, we're at the new year, and this is the time of year where everybody's making resolutions, mm-hmm. and yet most people don't keep their resolutions. Part of the reason that that happens is because they don't know that, again, it's a spiral. You're going to take a couple of steps forward, and then you're going to slip. Now, if you don't know to expect that, then it really throws you for a loop, and most people give up. So if you understand the concept that it is a process, there's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days, you're going to blunder along the way, then I think with that proper expectation, you're more likely to have success.
And you talk about in your book the reason for that, the reason it's a process, the reason you have to expect some setbacks is because we have neural conditioning. So there are certain ways that our minds are like patterned to work due to some crisis that happened to us early in our lives. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I find that personally to be really interesting, like that we do often operate from a habitual way of thinking and reacting
yes.
to things.
Oh, absolutely. When we're little, everything that happens to us is more on an experiential level. As a matter of fact, when we are born, our brain is very experiential. Our cognitive part, our thinking part of the brain, does not really develop initially. That doesn't really start developing. You can see the progression, because even as a child learns, you realize that they're not capable of learning until they get a little bit older. And so that portion of the brain continues to develop, but our experiences, they're there right in the beginning. There's a portion of the brain called the amygdala, mm-hmm. and that is there for our survival immediately, as soon as you're born. So we are experiencing everything around us. And a child is automatically going to feel that whatever is happening is their fault. Mm-hmm. Because, again, they don't have the ability to think about, well, daddy's had a bad day, or maybe mommy's premenstrual, or maybe there's dysfunction in this family. So if it feels bad, they assume it's something that they did. Now, every child wants to be loved. We all want to be loved. Mm-hmm. And so if a child is doing something and the parents are happy with what the child is doing, whatever it is, the child's going to continue to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, in a normal family, if everything goes well, then you have a good foundation and you grow up to be healthy and you feel good about yourself. But in a family where there's dysfunction, and the truth of the matter is there's always some dysfunction, it just depends on how much, mm-hmm. then your brain learns to make these connections with whatever it is that you learned in your family. So let's say that in some families, your mom was depressed, and mom could be depressed for a number of reasons. And so the child now learns to do all these things to take care of mommy to make her feel better. Well, if now mommy fondly smiles or gives the child a little bit of attention, the child figures, okay, I have to keep doing this. I'm getting attention this way. Mm-hmm. So later in life, that child is still going to grow up to be an adult who's a caretaker.
And performing for everybody's happiness.
That's exactly right.
So how does that get in the way? I mean, we have to go to a break soon, but how does that, okay, so now that behavior is in place. This is a person that needs to please people. How does mm-hmm. that get in the way from that person's ability to be, to let's say, overcome anything, like how to be a successful human being, how to be happy in their relationships? How does that interfere?
Well, because they're not thinking clearly about whether this is really servicing them. I had mm-hmm. a client recently who couldn't understand why her relationships were not successful, and it was because people were using her.
Mm.
I mean, that's the quicker version, because you said we have to break soon.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so I want to get back to that when we come back. We need to take a break. Like I said, you're listening to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on NewYorkTalkRadio.net. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Karen Sherman, and who is the author of The Art of Choice. The Mindfulness and the Art of Choice in Transforming Your Life. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on NewYorkTalkRadio.net. Today I'm talking to Dr. Karen Sherman, who is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. Dr. Karen Sherman, can you please tell us how somebody can find out more about your book while they're listening online and perhaps order it?
Sure. A couple of ways, certainly on Amazon.com or any of the online bookstores. You can order from my website, which is drkarensherman.com or choicerelationships.com.
And I highly recommend it. Dr. Sherman sent me a copy of the book, and I had the opportunity to read it. And there's some great suggestions in there to help you overcome, you know, the repetitive patterns that we all engage in and that keep us from reaching our highest potential. It's a great book. So before we went to break, you were mentioning how this one client you had was repeating patterns of, you know, this people-pleasing pattern of her childhood, and it was getting, people were using her and it was getting in the way of her happiness. So what do you do? So tell me a little bit about that change, because now she's operating from this neural pathway of her past. What does she have to do to change that? What would you suggest is be the first thing that she would do to come out of that?
Well, the first thing that anybody has to do, and let me say, Barbara, you know, we're talking now about like these very dramatic childhood issues, but we could be talking about any number of things. You know, you're in nutrition. Mm-hmm. We could be talking about people who have trouble changing their eating patterns.
Yeah.
You know, I, for one, when I was a kid, was soothed by eating, because mm-hmm. my parents would be gone a lot of times, and when they would leave, they would say, oh, you know, go have some ice cream with grandma or something.
Right.
So that became the way I soothed myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anytime I would get upset, I would, you know, hit the ice cream or hit the candy or whatever. So the first thing that you have to do, whether your change is small or large, is know that there's a behavior that isn't really towards your benefit. You can't make a change unless you're aware.
Right.
Okay? The next thing that you have to do is decide, do you really want to change it?
Yeah. It's true.
Okay.
But see, now, how can somebody, because here's something I come up against in my practice all the time. It's like, what's the difference between wanting to change it and then acting? Because people, everybody thinks that they want to be thin, everybody thinks that they want to be healthy, but when it comes to doing the work, they can't muster up the energy to do it.
Well, I think that you have to look at what are the reasons. Let's go to your practice. What are the reasons that I want to change? If somebody says, I want to change just because I want to be thin, that's outward.
Right.
You know, I had a weight problem my entire life until I really looked at what was the reason that I was heavy. And once I realized what was really going on, it took a good portion of my life. Not that I was ever truly, truly, like, really obese,
mm-hmm.
but I definitely had a weight problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't, because sometimes I gain 5 pounds or 6 pounds, but when it gets above that, it doesn't go above that, because I say to myself, okay, what am I doing here?
Right.
You know, I have a whole different mindset about why am I eating?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it, what's really going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, I talk about, and I'm not supposed to say in the book, so let me just say
why
that.
Why not?
Because you're not supposed to say in the book.
Okay.
But, okay, here are the tools. One of the things that we have learned to do in our culture is spend a lot of time thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And what we don't do is pay attention to our bodies. Our bodies are wonderful barometers because any time that there is something going on emotionally, it will also be expressed in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people that you have to first know what your body feels like relaxed. And there's a way to relax your body and by doing a tightening and loosening muscle exercise to know what your body feels like relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And then once or twice a day, just tune into your body and say, am I feeling relaxed or not? Because once you know what your body feels like relaxed and or tight, your body will start to be a barometer. It will start to be a signal for you. And if your body is tight, then you start to say, okay, what's really going on?
Mm-hmm.
So first step to actively really pay attention to your body.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. So, and then after you've gotten in touch with that feeling, then what's the next thing that you would suggest?
Well, you also have to pay attention to what your thinking is, because there is generally so much critical thinking going on that you're doing about yourself, and I call those garbage thoughts,
mm-hmm.
because they're tapes that you have been playing in your head that you're not even aware of. You know, if you make a mistake, you're most likely thinking things like, what's wrong with me? Why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. I should have known better.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not even aware of it. But yet, it's really having a very negative effect on your psyche, on your emotions, and on your self-esteem. So once you become aware of those thoughts, you have to learn how to shut them down because they're not serving you in any purpose. Probably they are things that you heard about yourself when you were young that you took in and really, as a child, came to believe that those are really true about you.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to stop those.
Wouldn't
cut those connections as well.
Right. I was just going to say, wouldn't have repeating those thoughts to yourself, which I think everybody tends to do, doesn't that deepen those neural pathways and that conditioned response to things?
Yes, it does. It continues those connections. So if you stop them, then it's going to stop that connection.
And how do you stop them?
Well, one of the things that you can do is just say to yourself, stop. Now, it's really not quite that simple because they're habitual that they do come back. But the more that you do it, the easier it gets. The other thing to do is to make yourself think of something neutral. Because once you are consciously thinking, notice I said that the other is going on without consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're consciously thinking, you cannot have two thoughts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make yourself think of something neutral, it must be something that's neutral to you, then you're shutting the other thought down.
Like what? Like it's a beautiful day? Or I mean, like...
Well, for me, I used to think of a flag.
Okay.
A flag had no meaning for me. Now, if you're a war vet, a flag is most likely not going to be neutral for you.
Okay.
So you have to think of something that has no meaning for you, because if it has meaning for you, it's going to call up more emotional energy.
Well, I'm curious, why wouldn't you pick something that has a positive reinforcement to it?
You can.